I can recognize that not every homily idea I have is a good one. My plan for this evening, and I printed it all off, I was going to start the homily by reading off the names of every saint that lived in the 20th and 21st century. That was the plan. That was plan A. It's 35 pages long. So we're going with plan B. Yesterday was Halloween, All Hallows Eve. The night before, we celebrate this day, All Saints Day. And on Halloween, it is customary to tell scary stories. So I thought it'd be appropriate, with us kind of bleeding those two nights together, to tell a scary story. It's a true story, by the way. It begins with our exorcist for the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, Father Vince Lampert. I figure any good horror story worth its salt has an exorcist in it, so we're going to start there. Father Vince Lampert, he got a call to travel to the East Coast because there was a convent out there that they were having some weird things happen at the convent. It had nothing to do with demons or anything like that, but every time that they would celebrate the Mass, every single time, didn't matter what time of day it was, when they got to the sign of peace during the Mass, the lights would go out. And then a couple of seconds later, they'd come back on again. At first, they thought it was an electrical issue, so they brought in an electrician, you know, and he looked at everything and couldn't find what the source of the problem was. And after thinking about it and recognizing that it happened every single time, and it didn't matter what time of day Mass was or what time the actual sign of peace took place, it happened, they began to think there might be a spiritual explanation. So they call Father Vince Lampert up, and he says, well, I'll come out and take a look at it. So he comes out, and he celebrates Mass, and sure enough, they get to the sign of peace, and all the lights in the church go out for about 5 seconds, and then they come back on again. Well, his theory was that the reason this was happening every time they celebrated the Mass was that there must have been, in the history of this convent, a nun, a sister, that had died and had been forgotten. That there were not prayers said for her. That somehow she fell through the cracks and they forgot to say Masses for her soul. And so to remedy the situation, because he was convinced the reason the lights were going out is because this nun was trying to get their attention, basically saying, help me, like, pray for me, like, this is what you're supposed to do. So he says, this is what we're going to do. We're going to spend the next week, and we're going to celebrate every Mass of this week for this anonymous nun that exists out there. And so they did, every day for a week. He stayed with them, and they celebrated Mass. They got to the sign of peace. The lights would go out. They'd come back on again. And they did this for the entire week, celebrating each of those Masses for this anonymous nun. Well, we finally get to Saturday, the last day of this week of prayers and saying these Masses. And they celebrate the Mass. They get to the sign of peace. And the lights go out. The candles extinguish. 5 seconds later, the lights come back on. And the candles relight. I know. True story, though. Father Vince Lampert witnessed this, and after that day, the lights never went off again. Now, does that mean that we know for certain that this anonymous nun made it to heaven? I'd like to think so. But it's not a guarantee. The people on this list, now that's a guarantee. They are legitimate, bona fide saints, and we know that for a fact. There's a whole process that goes into becoming a saint, and there's, you know, Pope Francis has made 49 saints, Pope John Paul II, he canonized 111 of them, and there's a whole slew of them that were outside of that as well. I mean, just tons of saints in just the 20th and 21st century. And the process, it is elaborate. The church puts this up for a reason. And, you know, it's that we know for a fact that these individuals have made it. They've made it to the promised land. And in the process, first of all, the person has to die. That's the first step. After they're dead, you got to wait 5 years. There's a 5-year waiting period before you can even begin the process of becoming a saint. Now, there are times that they waive that, like they waived it for Pope John Paul II, where there was no waiting period, and then for Mother Teresa of Calcutta, there was only a 3-year waiting period. So there are times that they make excuses for that. Usually it's 5 years, the bishop of the diocese has to recognize that there was a person in his diocese that was a very holy man or woman who was filled with the Spirit, you know, and exemplify these virtuous traits, and then they submit that name to Rome, and if Rome agrees, yes, this person seems to be right for the job of being a saint, then they begin the cause of canonization. At that point, they become what's called a servant of God. Now, after they made a servant of God, then it's up to the diocese to begin researching this person. They have to get all of the letters they've ever written, all of the notes they've ever written, all the things they've ever said, and they have to examine all of it and make sure that all of it lines up with what the Catholic Church teaches, that all of it is what a saint would say. And so it takes years, it takes decades to do all this research and to figure out and get evidence, gather evidence in favor of the individual. Once they get that all done, then they send it off to a commission in Rome who reviews all of this, and if they deem this person to be worthy, and again, this takes a very, very long time, then they are made a venerable, which means that you can start praying to them for miracles. Now, this to me is the amazing part of the whole process. Everything that goes before is from our point of view. You know, we look at this, we see a virtuous life, a holy person, and it makes sense. Yes, like they can be an example for future generations of what it means to be a saint. But the whole point of becoming a saint is to prove that you're a citizen of heaven, that you have made it there. And so the only way we can get that is if there's a sign from the other side. And I'm not counting on ghost hunters to do that for us. So we wait for miracles. Usually they're medical miracles where an individual is in an impossible situation where they have some disease that is incurable or it's something that medical science can't explain when the miracle takes place. And it has to be lasting. It can't be something that just happens and they get sick again. It has to be a permanent change in that person. On top of that, not only do they have to pass all the medical things for this miracle to take place, but the family that was praying to this venerable or blessed person has to only pray to that venerable person. So for instance, if you have a family member and they're miraculously healed in the hospital, but yet you were praying to this venerable person, but you're also praying to Saint Joseph and Mary and some of the other saints, it's not very clear that it was that person that caused the miracle, that venerable individual. And so it is insane how rare it is to actually find these miracles and that person was the exclusive one that they were praying for this to happen. And not only does that happen once, you got to do it twice. You need to have two miracles to be a saint. The first one makes you a blessed, and then after you're blessed, the second miracle gets you on the fast track to canonization. So it is. It's an extremely difficult process, and we still have a whole list of them. Now, the reason I like the story of the anonymous nun is because she didn't go through this process, right? She was not canon. We don't even know her name. We have no idea which nun we're talking about here. And fairly certain, everyone who's here tonight, none of us are going to go through this process. Well, maybe Matthew and Jacob, our two servers, they might go through this process. I can see it now. It'd be St. Matthew and companion. How does that sound, Jacob? You're okay with that? Or should it be St. Jacob and companion? No, you're okay being the companion? Okay. But most of us are not going to go through this process. But that doesn't mean we're not going to be saints. What we celebrate today is the fact that this list, as long as it is, it scratches the surface. That this is just a small percentage of the souls that have made it to heaven. That in fact, this church, even now, the pews seem fairly empty. It is packed in here. It is clamoring up to the rafter tops with the souls of the deceased. They are here because we are celebrating the Mass. This is heaven on earth, and they are with us even now. And it is a great multitude beyond counting, as we hear in the first reading. That you can't even begin to calculate the number of souls that have made it into heaven. It is an incredible thought what that means for us. Now, I started this homily with a scary story. But I don't care what horror movie you watch. I don't care what scary story you tell on Halloween. The scariest story of all is if we don't become saints. And so for us celebrating this day of All Saints, it is a reminder that not only is it possible, but it is our destiny It is our ultimate goal. I remind people all the time, our goal in this is not to make it to purgatory. I mean, that's great. You make it there, and you're on your way. That is great. But our goal should be nothing less than to be saints, to strive for that with everything that we have, because ultimately, in this life, that's what matters. And so the grand hope is that one day, this feast day will celebrate us. Amen.